what we saw in chapter 2 was kind of Nebuchadnezzar's vision, or mankind's vision of these empires that came up that we're going to see. And they were pictured as gold and silver and bronze. This is more the way heaven sees those things, as you're going to see voracious animals with an appetite for destruction. And so what sometimes mankind sees as the enlightenment is really the opposite of that in heaven to you. And so we see here this first, it was like a lion. We'll go ahead. And then behold, another beast, a second one like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise and devour much flesh. So we'll kind of go through, you know, what this is and the bears and all these at the end. But it's kind of interesting that it gives you the clue that these things are still being controlled, because it's told, arise and devour much flesh. It's given that stipulation. And after I looked, behold, another like a leopard with four wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. Does anybody notice something different here? All three of the original beasts could be associated. Does it say they were a bear or an eagle or a leopard? It says they were like. This one is so vicious, there's no animal that compares to it. It doesn't have an animal in its descriptor. It's just horrifying. And that's what Daniel's seeing. That it's not, he can't even say, oh, it's like some beast. It's just terrible. And you'll see how much of a shock to his system this kind of is. It had great iron teeth, which is kind of a hint. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that was before it, and it had 10 horns. So, just to think, we don't, our culture and how we've been raised, we don't really see in the ancient culture, horns was a symbol of power. Like, you know, a ram's horn, all these animals that were horned away, you know, the rack of a deer or of an elk, and all this promoted power and strength and dominion. So we're going to see 10 horns that basically say there's going to be 10 leaders involved in this. And, man, you want to talk about, you could spend the rest of your life reading books about the 10 horns, because everybody has an idea. And, you know, mine's no better than the, I don't even know, so. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up from among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and the mouth speaking great things. So, for it to speak, we're going to make the assumption that this is actually a man, a person. And so this is actually an 11th horn, which is kind of interesting, because you actually see some things that get that wrong right off the beginning. They try to make this one of the 10 horns. But as you can see, this is an 11th horn that comes up, and it plucks out three of the first horns. So I guess three guys were like, we ain't going along with the program, and he gives them a little incentive program, so the other seven kind of fall in line. Because we're going to see, as this starts out as a little horn, it becomes a very big deal. So, just to give you a heads. So verse 9, as I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and there was hair on his head like pure wool, and his throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. Couple things there. Is there a throne placed? Nope. They are thrones placed. So again, back to divine counsel. And you can even make that. I was listening to a commentary about in Revelation, you will see 24 elders on thrones that throw down their crowns. And so you can make an argument that this, and then is it Ephesians 3 where it says, Paul says, I had the privilege of making a thing known to you that was before this hidden from the foundation of the earth. So as a dispensationalist a little bit, I believe that that is the church. That the church is a completely different entity than anything that's been seen since the beginning of time. And so the thrones that are around his throne are, they're alluded to, but they're not specifically mentioned here because they're not going to be revealed until the New Testament, if you will. You can make that argument. So you can do with that what you can. And then when you get into his hair, like the head of pure wool, his head was like pure wool. We've seen that before. And then the fiery flames and the wheels, I mean, that's definitely Ezekiel, right? When he has this, which everybody tries to make a UFO and stuff, but that's a description. What's that? Yeah. So, verse 10, a stream of fire issued and came out from before him. A thousand served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were open. So that's a pretty scary deal, you know. It just shows you at some point, you know, I just look at some of the people in our leadership and other things and just people, and you just see what they're doing, and you're like, do you not think this has any consequences? I don't know how people do it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe your mind just gets so seared at some point that you just kind of go off the rails. But, I mean, I always think of the ultimate judgment and stuff, and it's kind of aggravating that people, you know, go through life and get away with some pretty horrible stuff. But it's not going to be forever. So, and this judgment will be a lot worse than any court you would face here on earth. And I look, verse 11, I look then, because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed, its body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. So it's kind of interesting when you get to Revelation, you'll see that this beast was cast into the lake of fire before the thousand-year reign. And at the end of the thousand-year reign, he's still there burning. So that's got to be a pretty interesting existence or whatever you did. And you could, you know, all throughout this horn is one of the, it's one kind of one of the most talked about persons in the Bible, in a sense. And the great words, he's always like boasting, and you think, what was the original sin? Anybody know?
Pride.
Satan said, I will be like the Most High. I will sit on the mountain of the Most High. That's when, you know, you make the argument up to that point, and have there had only been one will in all of creation, and that was the will of God. And then once Satan said, no, I want to be, there became a split, a duality, if you will, between good and evil. And so that was, it's kind of interesting that that's this guy's biggest thing, and you're going to see he makes blasphemous speeches and all kind of stuff. Again, verse 11, I look because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking, and as I looked, the beast was killed, his body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beast, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. So we're going to see when we get to the end and delve into this a little bit, all those kingdoms that we describe, if they're the ones that I believe that you can make a really, really strong case for who they are, all of them kind of went away. They were conquered, but their influence kind of went on with, you know, emotion that couldn't be stopped for a while until it kind of died off. The next one took over. It died off, but it didn't just end in a day. Take, for example, if one of the kingdoms is Greece, me and Scott were talking about. Think about, if you would look at this, you would say, all this has happened is just horrible. Things are going on to humanity. People are being killed. But in some, out of that puzzle and out of that mess, God is making it to where the Greek language becomes the language of the world. It's setting the stage for the New Testament, for the gospel to go out. The roads that we talk about, all roads lead to Rome. I mean, as terrible as the Roman Empire was, that thing, but the stage is being set for things to be put into place that, with all these other kingdoms on the world, maybe the gospel hadn't spread the way it spread. That once you have one, and it's kind of interesting that Hebrew and Greek, the language, are the two languages that each letter has a number associated with it. So they were able to, like, if you look at, like, when they make Greek translations, at the bottom of the page, they would write a number, and that's how many, that's every letter on that page should add up to that number when I'm done. And if it was, didn't, I knew I had missed something, and I just threw that. And think, that's like hours and days worth of work to write a page on that parchment, and then just to say, oh, it should have been 967, it's 965. Start over. So it's pretty interesting that all that was prepared by God through all this turmoil, and he's always like expressing that I'm in control. It looks bad, it looks terrible, but I'm in control. So verse 13, it says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven came one like the Son of Man, and he came into the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. So obviously we know, anybody know who the one like the Son of Man would be? He took that title in the New Testament constantly. Jesus. So they're showing the duality that here he is with the Ancient of Days, which would be Yahweh, which would be God, as we, the three-letter God that we know. So, and I can make the argument that presented before him, guess who's presenting him, which would be the Eleazar of this story, which would be the Spirit. So we see the triune figure of God right here in all three forms. I can make that argument. I don't think it's super important. So here's what is important. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. So what we've seen up to this point is, though all these people are given power and prestige and dominion and glory, that only one gets it eternally, that all the others have a time stamp on it, and they will come to their end. So in verse 15 it says, as for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I find verse 16 really, really interesting. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of things. So it's obvious that there's other, I wonder if this would be, I know it's not named here, but what we would call the watchers. Because what's the guy doing? He's watching, right? And he knows what's going on. So, you know, it's almost like when John was taken into heaven, and he's like, you know, he sees the throne of God and all the things unfolding, and he's being on a guided tour. So, well, this is what's happening, and then he falls down on the floor convulsing, right? What's the same kind of thing in the Old Testament. And so, verse 17, he's going to give a rundown. This being that's part of this scene is going to give him the rundown. These four great beasts are the four kings who shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. So that's the comforting, that's like, look, you've seen all this nastiness, you've seen these voracious animals, you've seen this other beast, but the saints of the Most High are going to, and they get the reward. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast. So you could say that's really, really interesting in the fact that he was like, he wasn't concerned with the other three, which is kind of good for us because we, the fourth beast is going to be the most interesting, I don't know, the most interesting, the most relatable to us as though, because we can make a very good case that the other three kingdoms have passed at this point. But the fourth one's being, is kind of machinating throughout history. And at one point, it will rear its head again. So it says, I desire to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, which devoured and broke into pieces and stamped what was left with his feet. Couple of interesting things here, and again, I will make the case kind of more at the end. If this is Rome, that well, and Rome gloried in we saw like how the Jews were taken by Nebuchadnezzar, all the best guys were taken into his kingdom, and that kind of the Medes and the Persians, and the same thing with Daniel, remained a leader. They absorbed empires, but they took what was good in that empire and tried to use it as part of their means. Rome didn't do that. Rome came in, I mean, you could see seats when you became a Roman conscript and joined the army, you signed up for 25 years. And you, but at the end of that, you got citizenship and a piece of land, which was pretty important back in those days. But if you were in a city or a town or whatever, and you woke up one morning and a Roman legion was marching over the horizon towards you, they were prepared to dig a trench around your city, and they would stay there for 25 years. That's what they were prepared to do. They would starve you out, cut off your water, cut off your trade, cut off, you know, they were hardcore, I mean, to the very end. And I think it's interesting here, if we go back and remember the visions of the, even in Nebuchadnezzar's, the vision of the statue, the feet were iron mixed with clay. So they weren't as strong as the rest, but I think it's interesting, and I don't know exactly what it is. And it says, and they stamped what was left with its feet. So I'm wondering if that's kind of moving into the future now. That's the kind of thing that's going to go on for a period. Because the Roman Empire, if you'll remember, it split in two. Never really was conquered by anybody. It just kind of faded away. And so that you had the Byzantine. So, that's brain freeze. What was the guy's name that, Constantine, moved the capital of Rome from Rome to Byzantium, if you'll remember. Because he was just, Rome was so corrupt, he didn't even want to be there. So he left there. So there was a left part of Rome and a right, like an east and a west, I should say, part. And both of them fell. One lasted all the way into like 112 A.D. or something like that. I mean, it was around for a long, long time. So again, I think what's interesting is that it was stamped what was left with its feet. And we saw those feet mixed with that iron, mixed with that miry clay, was what made up the feet. And about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up before which three of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke great things, and that seemed greater than its companions. So again, this horn's going to start out as a diminutive called the little horn, but he quickly is going to ascend to a leadership role. So here's a very, very controversial verse. And I looked, and this horn made war with the saints, and the saints prevailed, and the saints, with the saints, and prevailed over them. So I can make an argument. Jesus, standing at the foot of Mount Hermon, said, this is my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail. So it seems to be contradictory unless these saints are not the exact same saints that are the saints of the church. And again, as a dispensationalist, I agree with that view. But you don't have to. It doesn't. But it's just, I don't know how you get around that statement if it isn't.
Well, but for this, the gates of hell, not that, that was to say that they, Satan's been prevailing over and killing believers since then.
Well, I agree, but this prevail would, I get more.
I'm just saying, but.
Right. Well, not, there was martyrs, there was all kinds
martyrs,
of stuff, right.
There, you can't take away that you can still,
but
you can be not, what I mean is the Lord still has you, even though the enemy can take you out.
I agree. Well, I'm saying, but the church actually flourishes during persecution, if you will.
And my verse 21 says, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. The next part says, until the Ancient of Days. So, yeah, they were winning, and God steps in. And he steps in and says, you know, enough of this. And he, that's when he shows up.
Well, we know that's the bottom line. Yeah, and all this.
He defeats them by the word of, you know, truth. He doesn't need to have war. He just, he comes and they die.
It's done. Yeah.
So, I don't know why that's been prevailing. Yeah, they were winning until he showed up and won the battle for him, because he fights the battle, not the people. I don't know why mine just says it was and prevailing against them. Yeah, it looks like they're winning.
So
he shows up.
A couple of verses. So I guess it's prevailing versus prevailed, I guess, is what it comes down to. And again, you'd have to know the original Greek manuscripts and go through all that. So, again, hopefully it doesn't affect your psyche or, you know, your relationship with God. I don't think it really matters. The bottom line, we already know who wins all of this.
The benefit is the one riding on the cloud.
Yeah. And this says until the Ancient of Days came, too, which is not... That's not the Son of God, Son of Man. So God himself steps in. So verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. I think it's kind of interesting when one of the things is Paul says, you guys are arguing amongst yourself and taking each other to court. Don't you realize one day you're going to judge angels? And I think this is a hint at that right now. And judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. So you could say the judgment was given and they were cleared, or you could say they're going to start judging the people that were persecuting them, that made war with them. So verse 23, thus he said, as the, for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth, trample it down, and break it into pieces. That's a pretty... So you could make an argument that at that time, pretty much the known earth was under the rule of Rome, or you could say this is going into the future, that there will be a single kingdom on earth that will rule the whole earth. So I think this is one of those happened back then, but it's also going to happen in the future.
But for Daniel at that time, it's all future.
Right.
For the fourth kingdom.
Well, it's fourth. Every king. Yeah, well, every kingdom's future for him. You got to remember, he's with Belshazzar.
Persons,
yeah.
Right?
Well, no, he's, except for the Babylonians. It says he's with Belshazzar.
Right. Well, he stays with Derek. I'm just saying, like...
Right. Every other kingdom.
After that is
the future. So he's seeing all the future. So, Verse 24, as for the 10 horns of the kingdom of this kingdom, 10 kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the former one, and he shall put down the three kings. I can make the argument a little ahead of time. Who will be giving satanic powers that the others don't have? And he shall speak words against the Most High, and again shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law. That's a big verse there, in the sense that if it's different versions have different things. I don't know what other people say. If it says the times and the laws, that can mean a whole different set of things. If it says the times and the law would be the Torah. Right? So, I don't have the original manuscripts. You can go through the internet and search on it, and you can find 50% of this and 50% of this. So I don't know which it is. And I'll show you one theory at the end. And they shall be given into his hand for a times and a half. So to quickly do this times and a half. So so if I was to tell you all my friends are coming over my house tonight, I can't wait to see both of them. That would be a true statement. But all could encompass anything where when I say both, that's a descriptive. Well, in this language, there isn't a descriptor for both. So this is basically times, two times, so it's basically three times and a half, which is the 3.5 years that we see, 42 months, 1,256 days. I forget exactly. I think that's it, 1,256. However, so that's a big number that's stressed throughout the scripture. I have no idea why, but God's making it a point, and the Holy Spirit's making it a point for you to know that it's 42 months, like 2.5 years, it's 1,256 days, for whatever that works out to. I don't know, but it's that's what that means. But verse 26, but the court shall sit in judgment, and its dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed in the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. Their kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey them. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, my color changed, and I kept the matter in my heart. So basically, in our vernacular, they say, he looks like he just saw a ghost. Right? So he's like bleached out and like flipped out about the whole thing.
Can I make a statement about
that? No statements. Go ahead.
I'm done. Here's what happens when you go seeking after what's going to happen. When it's all said and done, what happened to Daniel? His countenance changed, and all it did was bother him.
Right. Well, it's kind of interesting, because if you read into what he was first on, he knew that the 70 years was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
They say he's about 68 years old at this time. He was taken like when he was 14, so they're 50-some years into this.
Right.
So he's realizing the 70 years are coming up. So he's like thinking, I think when he went into this, he's thinking, hey, we're going to go back to Jerusalem, and this is going to all be, and God's like, nah, there's a lot more to this than you know. So I will go through. So here I can make an argument that this is, if I ask you guys if anybody wants to do their research on anything other than these four kingdoms. Like I said, I was talking about it. We saw that with the global warming. We've seen it with the virus. With the, anytime everybody agrees on everything, it's a lie, right? So this is a little tough, but this is pretty much, and I can make, and I will make a case for all these different kingdoms in this. So what we just went through, verse 7, chapter 4, it's the same. It's in black up there, and you can't really see it. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then I looked, and its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and was made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the mind of a man was given to it. So we'll step back to chapter, this is what's in the red, step back to chapter 4, verse 3. And immediately the word was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from among men, ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven till his head grew as long as an eagle's wings, feathers, and his nails were like a bird's claws. And we realize that eventually, after 7 years, his wings were plucked off. He was raised up. He was given a mind. He actually wrote the next chapter in the Bible. So I can make an argument, that pretty solid argument, that the first part of this statue and the first kingdom is Babylon. All right, 7:5. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth, between its teeth, and was told, arise, devour much flesh. This would be the Medo-Persian Empire. They defeated Egypt, Babylon, and Assyria. That would be the three ribs. It was raised up on one side because the king was his mother was a Mede and his father was a Persian. So he was the perfect meld of this, but eventually, even today, it's called the Persian Empire. One empire actually becomes the dominant, one half of this becomes the dominant empire, and it would be the Persian side of that. So I could make a strong argument that the second beast, the bear, is the Medo-Persian Empire. 7:6. After this I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with four wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So Alexander, we're going to see, and I'll show you a map. Alexander, he conquered the world before he was 30. He actually laid in his bed and cried because there was no more battles to fight. This thing is like conquering so quickly, it's like on wings. It's like barely even touching the ground. And
like the first Iraq war.
Yep, yeah. And so the interesting part is he had no children. He had nobody. So when he got, like, deathly sick, some people believe he was poisoned, or you can go through the whole. But what he basically did at the end of his life, they were like, who will get the kingdom? And the story is told that he just said, let him fight for it. Or basically, let the strongest one have it. So he had four generals. They split the kingdom up in four ways, and they fought each other for the next, 500 years. So, and we're going to kind of, and all what's, again, what's really, really super interesting is how this plays out into the spread of the gospel and the Jews and what goes on in Jerusalem. All right, for the last one. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth and devoured in broken pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts before it, and it had 10 horns. So you can see at the bottom there, I said, Rome excelled at destruction. That was their, they took pride in what they, you kind of, for everybody that watched the Gladiator movie, you saw that when they were supposed to have the Battle of Carthage, but it ended up, Russell Crowe won by accident. That's what they were all about, man, destroying their enemies. It just, they, if you hear anything about the Carthage, they killed everybody, and they actually took salt and seeded the ground so nothing could grow there. They, took the ultimate in destruction on that, if you will. So, I sat down and showed you how each one of these, I tried to find a map as best I could. So, you'll see on the left here, the Babylonian Empire, what it encompassed as far as land mass. I don't know how you draw a line through the Red Sea. I kind of think that's kind of funny. That unless their boats could go so far off the coast that they considered, some out in the water part of their land or something. But I kind of find it interesting that there's lines in the ocean.
Well, it opened the other way, not that way.
And then in the top right is the, the Medes and the Persians, so the yellow. So you can see how that expanded from the Babylonian Empire. And then at the bottom is Greece under Alexander. And you can see it goes from Greece. He just constantly headed east and got all the way over into India. And Real quick discussion, if there's a channel out there. If you see, the person that he was fighting with was what was left over of the Babylonian, Medes and the Persians. And so he ends up, we will find these, the Magi, which became these very important, they were the kingmakers in this kingdom. So him and Xerxes fight basically west of Babylon the first time. This is Alexander and him. Xerxes loses. He flees the battlefield. So he keeps running east, and Alexander keeps chasing him till eventually he overtakes him. I forget where it's at, the city that it's at. Well, anyway, but what happens is two of the king's guys in his army, not even like generals or anything, somehow they get alone with him and they kill him. So they take him back to, take his head back to Alexander the Great, and they're going to say, hey, you've won the battle, we have the head, the king's dead, it's all yours. He kind of does a David move and has them killed because he's like, he was the king, you should have never touched him. That was not your job, that was for me. So things, throughout history, there's a lesson for you. If you're ever going to kill the king, do it and run away. Don't take it. Don't take it to the next king and try to show him taking it as a bride.
Yeah.
And then this is the stretch of Rome. So you can see what the difference is between all those kingdoms and what Rome, I mean, all the way up into England, they fought the Germanic tribes in what's now Germany and all up through there. I mean, that was the opening of the Gladiator movie, was that kind of stuff, the Gauls. And then here is, you can make the argument, again, theory. I'm not one side. Here are the 10 regents that how the Roman Empire was governed. And these would be, quote unquote, the 10 horns, if you will, if you ascribe to this theory. Kind of interesting, I think I was telling everybody before, I stumbled across a little factoid that kind of interested me. Every one of these provinces or ruling areas has tried to rule the world. Germany twice, Spain, England, Italy, every country on this map has tried to rule the world. Everybody, right? So it's kind of interesting. There's your 10 horns. If, again, I'm not saying that's perfect. I don't know how much it matters, but God told us, so could that be it? So here I wanted you to see these. This is how the Greek Alexander's empire was great. Let me see if I, there it is. So here you see the green. Then, so here's the four empires, the green, the yellow, the blue, and kind of the orange. And the really, really important thing is, if I could get this move slower there, this empire and this empire, the Seleucid Empire, meet rare, right where? Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the battlefield. One group would conquer it. They would install it's, and maybe I'll share that thing when we get close to Christmas with the Hanukkah thing, because it's really interesting how that came about. But when this kingdom would conquer, they would actually pick the high priest they wanted. And they would pick a high priest that was a Hellenist, right, that wanted to induce Greek culture. That was, well, this obviously infuriated a lot of the Jews. And at one point they kill the guy, but then the other empire comes in and takes Jerusalem over. They put another guy in as high priest, but he's not quite as bad as the other guy. So some people accept him, some people don't. So this meeting, a tectonic meeting, if you will, of these two plates right in Jerusalem, what is the chance that that happened by accident? Huh? What is the chance that that happened by accident? So, again, here we can make the argument. So, eventually, again, this is conquered by Rome. But what flees from Salome's empire becomes, I think it's the Parthians of Genesis, I guess that would be the people there, that they flee to the west, or to the east, I mean. So that, now you know why when, and it's a we three kings. It wasn't three kings. It was, they were marching with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They marched into Jerusalem with a small army, if you will. And now you know why it caused so much consternation, because that's where the wars were. That's what started all these wars, was one army from the east marching into Jerusalem and trying to throw out the army from the west. And now you see history unfolding all the way into the New Testament. Now, it won't be the Greek Empire. It'll be the Romans. But this was, at that time, kind of the frontier of the Roman Empire. Like, the rule Judea was, if you see the Chosen and all, that was a terrible place. They hated being there. And so you see how much, you know, that's the edge of their empire, where they were constantly expanding, contracting. So that's your little bit of history for the... So, here, I'll give you a quick... So some people say the Catholic Church is the beast. I don't know if I ascribe to that, but I will give you the theory. So the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, as you all know, like the Anabaptists, all these other people that wanted to stick to the scriptures as they were written, they were persecuted by the Catholic Church in Europe during this time. And so you could make the argument that Daniel 7:21, that verse, contends with them. And in 7:25 it says, and to think to change the times, and again, this translation says, and laws, which would be the Pope changed the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday because they hated the Jews. And then he also changed the calendar, that we have the Gregorian, is that right? We're the Gregorian calendar now, right? That changed. Because when we had a 360-day calendar, the planting season had got so far out of the calendar that they were like, if you went by the calendar, you would be planting in January, which, as you know, or actually, yeah. It got, the calendar got off, so that's why we have to have a 364-day calendar with a leap year, with all these other things, and the Pope did that.
And something about,
well, we're getting
a little
month, like
October,
obviously,
but it's
the 10th month. Yeah, everything kind of got done. So... And again, just one theory. I don't know that that's totally...
You guys can come in.
You can come in.
We're done.
We're done.
We're finished.
Come
in for coffee.
You can't tease like that.
Finish your Bible study, but you're good. Come in. Get some coffee.
Yeah, we're done. We're just...
Okay.
Anybody have questions, answers, anything to add, anything to...
What I say,
except Mike, I didn't add that. All right.
What I say is, in the Old Testament, God chose Daniel Houseman. In the New Testament, He chose John Houseman. Nothing changed. You know, He is unchanging, and for us to know, He has to be God or not.
Right.
You know, and that's what makes God God. He is the Supreme, and He gives us an insight so that we have something to look forward to. We can study it, try to learn it, but once we start projecting into it what we think it should be, that's where we make our mistakes.
Yep.
And I think He wants us to know that the behind all the what we're learning here is that He is in control. He knows the beginning. He knows the end. And we fit in here to now do that.
Agreed. Anybody else?
Those who seek shall find.
Anybody want to volunteer to close us in prayer? Gary? You were late.
You didn't type, no.
Lord, thank you for this time. We pray a blessing upon the rest of this time fellowship together, upon the message, and upon our time, Lord, as we look to you. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. Chris's tape because I don't want